And now the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Google murder-suicide, and stories about the death of former pro quarterback Steve McNair pop right up. The phrase domestic violence is mentioned in just a few of them. In a recent op-ed in the Baltimore Sun, Dr. Ned Holstein and Glenn Sachs argued that men are routinely overlooked as victims of domestic violence by law enforcement, by the judicial system, and by the media. What is your experience? Is it wrong to assume the man is usually the perpetrator and the woman the victim? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Dr. Ned Holstein joins us now from the studios of member station WBUR in Boston. He is the co-author of the op-ed, The Violence We Ignore, with Glenn Sachs. And nice to have you on the program today.
Great to be here, Neil.
And the McNair situation, obviously one anecdote, but you're right. None of those stories mention this as an incident of domestic violence, or very few.
Well, it almost never happens.
Why?
Well, I think that there is a sort of cultural resistance to acknowledging that women, too, can often be violent. And beyond general attitudes, we also have the specific attitudes of what I'm going to call the domestic violence establishment that specifically denies that female perpetrated domestic violence is much of a factor at all.
What evidence do we have as to who initiates the violence most of the time? Who's responsible?
Let me say to begin with that I'm not really interested in a blame game, and Fathers and Families is not really interested in a blame game. But what we are interested in is protecting everybody, men, women, and children. And to do that, we have to take account of reality. There are over 200 studies now that clearly show that women perpetrate, and I would say more than that, initiate domestic violence at rates that are about equal to those of men. Now, there is one important disproportion. Because men are stronger, more women are injured. Women account for about two-thirds of the injuries, and men account for about one-third of the injuries. But nevertheless, the incidence initiation of domestic violence by women is quite substantial. And if we want to protect people, we have to have open eyes about this and think about it clearly.
And you argue in your op-ed that, in fact, a lot of the laws in this country, and obviously these vary state by state, but a lot of the laws in this country presume that in most situations the woman is the victim and the man the perpetrator.
Well, look at the major federal vehicle for funding domestic violence work. It's called the Violence Against Women Act. It's not called the Domestic Violence Act. And we see the same attitude propagated downward. Now, the real problem with this is that it fails to protect everybody. First of all, it obviously fails to protect men who do have violent partners. But the ironic thing about this is that it also fails to protect many women. Well, how could that be? Well, if we really look at the data, what we find is that in couples where there is domestic violence, in about half of those couples, the violence is a two-way street. Sometimes he starts it, sometimes she starts it. Sometimes he hits her, sometimes she kicks him, and it can go either way. And what several researchers have found is that when a woman initiates the violence, she has a very high danger of being injured in retaliatory violence. So one of the things we can do to protect women is to teach women that just as it's not okay for men to hit women, it's also not okay for women to hit men, if for no other reason than self-protection. Now, I know that whatever retaliatory violence might occur cannot be condoned or excused. But it's a little bit the same principle that we're taught when we're young or when we're teenagers. Don't go walking down a dangerous neighborhood in the middle of the night on a dangerous street. If you get attacked, no one can condone the attacker for doing it to you. But nevertheless, if you want to be practical and protect yourself, there are some things you don't do. And so we could help women by teaching women that it's not okay for them to hit their male partners. And by teaching them that, which the domestic violence establishment refuses to do, we can help protect some of those very same women.
How does it refuse to do that?
Well, there is an ideology at work. I hate to say it, but it's true. And there has been minimization and denial of women's role in domestic violence. For instance, Obama just recently appointed Lynn Rosenthal to be the White House czar of domestic violence. And she comes out of this tradition. And this tradition has it that domestic violence only occurs for one reason, and that is a patriarchal insistence of men on controlling women. The problem with that conception is that it eliminates, it rules out all sorts of things that are avenues or wedge points for controlling domestic violence. First of all, it rules out that women ever start it themselves. And I just talked about that. It also rules out substance abuse as an important factor. And lots of instances of domestic violence are directly related to alcohol or substance abuse. And that offers us an opportunity to help prevent it. Third, it also rules out psychiatric disorders. Some people who commit domestic violence are just plain crazy. And instead of needing education on their patriarchal impulses of control, what they need is mental health assistance.
We're talking with Dr. Ned Holstein, the founder of the organization Fathers and Families, about an op-ed that he wrote in the Baltimore Sun called The Violence We Ignore. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's get Steve on the line. Steve calling us from Syracuse.
Hello.
Hello, Steve. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Just want to say one of my first jobs out of grad school with a new MSW is at an emergency room at Upstate University Hospital in Syracuse. And the powers that be were going to write a policy, and as you could probably tell with this topic, it was all about when she comes in, you'll remove him from her. And I'm looking around at all these high-ranking state employees, doctors, and otherwise psychologists, and not one of them is picking up on the observation this, you know, idiot, sort of, meaning myself, is going, now, wait a second, now this is like over 90% of the situations, but it's not all of the situations. And when we genderize violence, at this point I'm a licensed clinical social worker in psychotherapy practice, and what I meet are violent and abusive personalities. Now, statistically, yes, more likely to be possessed by male, but if what we look for are the genders, we're going to miss the personality, and that's the topic. And I think this artifact of this czar of domestic violence, how many years forward, I don't know, that somehow we approach this through genderization, we missed an awful lot of people, real-life human beings and families in pain. And that's just my observation.
Okay, Steve, would that fit into the ideology that you're talking about, Dr. Holstein?
Well, it certainly does, and this has been studied. As a physician, I often see forms in hospital records in which people are routinely asked, do you feel safe at home, or do you feel in danger at home? And the only ones who actually ever who are ever asked this question are female patients. Male patients are never asked this question. Now, a lot of people, what our caller just described seems counterintuitive because men are bigger and stronger. But do recall that when you live together with a person, there are multiple opportunities for surprise or the use of weapons. Weapons are equalizers, and so is the element of surprise. You sneak up behind someone, you hit them over the head with a wine bottle, they're going to be injured. And this does happen to men.
Steve, thanks for the call.
If there's a line in the sand, it sort of begins quasi-equal, but I agree with your speaker there that that's usually not the case. You know, I mean, it's not going to be some face-off. It's going to be opportunity. We're talking about violent personalities.
Thanks very much, Steve. Bye-bye. Let's go next to, this is Rebecca. Rebecca calling from Columbus.
Hello, Neil. I have to say I'm somewhat troubled by this conversation, particularly because I believe that when we start to talk about instances of male victims and instances of domestic violence, we miss a really big opportunity with regard to teaching young men and women about the cycle of power and control that contributes to domestic violence situations. I am an advocate for victims of domestic violence here in Columbus. And I have to say, as part of a series of classes that we teach to high school and junior high school students, that begins with the spectrum starting at sexual harassment, going on to dating violence and sexual violence, that we do draw a line in the sand when talking about this. And we think that my opinion is that it's not really being genuine to the situation to make it seem as though there's a 50-50 split, as though men are experiencing this sort of victimization as often as women are. And the reason I don't think that's fair to talk about it is I think that we really miss an opportunity with regard to prevention. And I think what the previous caller was saying with regard to violent personalities. You know, there's a lot in our culture that sort of, I don't know, glorifies a male, you know, dominant role and a female submissive role. And it's those sorts of, you know, social programming that I think really contributes to the cycle of violence. And, you know, I really think that the stereotypes that are associated with the damsel in distress and the, you know, aggressive male are, you know, are also contributing factors. So while I don't think that we should be ceasing a dialogue about, you know, instances of male victimization and, you know, situations regarding domestic violence, I think that, you know, it's really important as we start to broaden the conversation that we are true to the fact that, you know, this is not a situation where there are equal numbers of female perpetrators.
If it's not 50-50, Rebecca, what do you think it is?
Well, I think that really what we need to talk about is a broadening of the what we consider to be domestic violence. I think that, you know, your guest brings up a lot of really great examples, and definitely this is a conversation that needs to be going on, but I don't think that the reason the conversation needs to be going on is such that we can educate the public on how much more aggressive and, I don't know, violent women are in comparing them to men, but as part of a conversation that's really about prevention and stopping that sort of behavior. And I just think that, you know, the reality of the situation is that there is a lot of social programming that contributes to this concept of male aggression and female submissiveness. And, you know, in the survivors that I have dealt with of domestic violence, whether they were women, and I have definitely worked with some men, and more often than not, and perhaps the most sad situation is with children of both genders, that it's this sort of social programming of power and control that I think allows domestic violence to skip from one generation to the other. And I really don't think this is a matter of clearing men's name or dirtying women's name with regard to...
I'm not sure that was what Dr. Holstein was talking about either, but let's give him a chance to respond.
Well, you're quite right that we're at Fathers and Families, we're not interested in a blame game. We want to protect people. But I am troubled by the comments because I think that they illustrate the exact kind of denial that I have made reference to in the domestic violence establishment. The fact that women initiate domestic violence about equally with men has now been established in over 200 studies, 200 published studies. They include studies by Harvard researchers, most recently in 2007, published in the American Journal of Public Health. It includes studies published by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one of the most highly esteemed public health research organizations in the country, by the Department of Justice, by Richard Gellis, who is chairman of a department at the University of Pennsylvania, by Murray Strauss, who's a chairman of a department at the University of New Hampshire, by male researchers, by female researchers, many different parts of the country, over 200 studies. And so I think the real issue before us now is, how do we come to grips with this, and how do we ask the question, how do we better protect everybody? And we haven't even talked about children yet, because so many children end up in the sole custody of mothers who may be violent personalities. So, and we haven't even talked about that. So we have a lot of work we need to do as a society, get past blame, look at reality, and protect people based on what the epidemiology shows.
Rebecca, I'm sure you could we could discuss this with you all day. We want to give some other people a chance, though.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for the discussion.
Thanks very much for the phone call. We're talking on the Opinion Page today with Dr. Ned Holstein, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This email from Dean in Michigan: I am male and happened to be in the University of Michigan Emergency Clinic this morning. They did ask me whether I was exposed to sexual or domestic violence, so some organizations are taking gender out of this issue. And let's see if we can go next to let's go next to Jay. Jay with us from Winter Park in Florida.
Yes, hi. This subject is particularly sensitive to me because as a child I was severely, viciously beaten by my mother. You know, basically just to comment on Domestic Violence Against Women's Act, I'm not sure why that hasn't come up as unconstitutional under the 10th Amendment of the Bill of Rights for one comment. But when I lived in South Florida, I remember a policewoman blatantly stating that they never make arrests when the male is the victim of domestic violence. And there was another one, again, in the Miami area that I had called the police for a different subject, but she said she was tied up because there was a fight where a woman was beating on a man at McDonald's because she insulted him. And if you look in the media, you know, I had asked that policewoman, did you make an arrest? And she got indignant at the question. But if you look also in media movies, sitcoms, when a woman gets insulted, they are allowed to strike. They're expected to strike. It's often perpetrated in the movies and in the media. What are we saying with all this?
And Jay's point, too, goes to what you were talking earlier about, Dr. Holstein, and that is that in situations involving law enforcement, again, the presumption is often that the male cannot be the victim. It's always the woman. And indeed, in Jay's case, that custody issues can go to the great preponderance is to women when, in fact, as you just mentioned a moment ago, there can be cases where the woman is very violent and can be dangerous to the child.
Denise Hines is a researcher at Clark University here in Massachusetts, and she actually studied and reported recently on what happens when men who are on the receiving end of domestic violence call the police. And what she found that was that even in that case where he's the one being hit and he calls the police, he's the one who ends up being arrested in 26% of the cases. His partner is who committed the abuse was arrested in just slightly more than half as often as he was arrested. Mm-hmm. And half the time the police didn't arrest anybody and just said, well, there's nothing we can do about this.
Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Dr. Ned Holstein, the founder of Fathers and Families, co-author of The Violence We Ignore, an op-ed he wrote with Glenn Sachs, recently appeared in the Baltimore Sun. There's a link to it at our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, writer Chris Hedges took on war and the Christian right. Now he targets pop culture and what he calls the cultural embrace of family, plus a new TV program that purports to track down terrorists. The Wanted airs tonight on NBC. We'll talk with one of the cast members tomorrow. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News.